I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
Words to describe the entrepreneur: creator, builder, confident, inquisitive, driven, maverick, rule breaker, independent, and controller. And what I realized by my next guest on the Business of Intuition, entrepreneurs trust and have the courage to make decisions based on their intuition. Kevin Urrutia is just such a person. He has launched not one, but three businesses. One serving the outdoor adventurer, another in home cleaning, and a third that we spent a lot of time talking about, Voy Media. Kevin is co-founder of this New York-based Facebook and Instagram ad company, known for its sophisticated and very creative approach to advertising. We talked about a lot of stuff, in particular, the mindset of the entrepreneur, great decisions he made by trusting his gut, adding humor to attract attention in ads, and why all business owners and leaders must learn and use social media if they are to appeal to a broad audience. Kevin Urrutia on the Business of Intuition. So Kevin, I'm fascinated by the fact that you call yourself a serial entrepreneur, which I've heard a lot. But as I understand it, you have started three businesses. And what I think, from my experience at least, you tell me if I'm wrong, that the decision-making process is different for an entrepreneur, for a person who doesn't have the stomach for that, that there's something that you go through that a lot of people don't go through. So my curiosity and my question is, how did you decide that you wanted to be an entrepreneur? Do you remember the moment that you kind of went, aha, this is my life's passion, this is what I want to be doing? What was it that made you realize, I want to be an entrepreneur working for the man?
Yeah.
So to speak.
That's a good question, because I've actually had to think about this. And so when I was like in high school, I used to play this game called Secrets of War. And basically it was like a text-based game. And I was like addicted to this game. But something that really made me kind of at least start thinking about like building my own thing. And at that time, you don't really know what like a startup is or a company is. I was just like, oh, this is really cool. So I remember contacting the developer. His name was like, I think at that time, like people had like usernames. So his username was like Hotcut. And I was like, hey, like, I was like, this game is really cool. Like, how did you make it? Because I want to do something like that. And that's like the first time for me, it was like, wow. Like, and at the time I was reading that it was one person making this game. And I was like, whoa, there's so many people on this thing playing. And that like was like, whoa, that's cool that you could make something. And then like hundreds of people could use it or play with it. And that was my first sort of like opening into like startups and learning about like programming essentially. So then he told me, hey, I'm using like HTML and this thing called like a C# to make this game. That's when I started to get my first books into programming. And then that's where I started researching more into like, oh, how do you design the things? And I remember like, oh, you gotta learn Photoshop. And I was like, okay, what's Photoshop? And I was like, okay, whoa, Photoshop is expensive. I was like, okay, like by the time I was like, okay, let me go and like find these torrents and figure out how to get like Photoshop at like 16 years old. But that sort of like experience of me trying to figure out how this thing was made was kind of where how I first got started, because I was just curious. And that curiosity made me realize, whoa, like I never knew about this like programming field at all, because growing up, my parents are very like into like, okay, you got to go to school, hard work. Yeah. Both my parents came from El Salvador when they were 18. So they immigrated here. And for us, it's about school, yeah, right? But at the same time, like my dad, he was really big into construction work. So he would always take me and my brother to jobs on the nights and weekends. And for him, it was because he needed to make side money for the family. So it was like this whole like working thing was kind of always in it for us. Cause he's like, if you're not studying, you're going to come with me to work. I'm like, okay, like this sucks. Like, and that's also why I kind of like was more into like the digital stuff or like online stuff, because I was like doing construction work like 14 years old. I was like, I hate this. Like, I do not want to be doing this physical work. Like, this sucks. And that's like, I got to find something else. And that sort of made me like be more attracted to computer stuff and programming. And then when I found this out, I was like, whoa, I could work from my computer and make more money than like I'm seeing my parents struggling to like work. And that was like really kind of like opened up my eyes to learning about this like startup ecosystem. And then I started learning about like tech, and I was like, whoa, okay, what is this tech world of like people raising tons of money and living out in San Francisco? And then that became like my dream for me. And I was like, I got to figure out anything I do. And then I went to college in Binghamton. I was still working on like startup stuff because this thing of building things was something I was so into. And I was remember at the time reading like stuff like Hacker News or like Y Combinator of like all these entrepreneurs just building ideas. And for me, like I always tell people like, yes, I had startups, but I was building stuff for a long time, like stuff that no one knows about because that's just that didn't work. But for me, it was like a learning experience. I remember trying to build like a Twitter clone. I remember building a website called like Monday.me, which is like a Quora.com for college students. Because at that time, I read that Mark Zuckerberg that's how he started Facebook because he did it for it. So I was like, I got to replicate that stuff. So that stuff was like exciting to me. I was like, and then I was just making stuff. And for me, it was kind of like just building that muscle of just making things. And essentially, like I was never afraid to fail because I was like, oh, I've done it. I failed like 20 times, but like I learned something every time. I was like, oh, like now I know how to program it this way. Oh, and like, how do you like make somebody sign into a user account? The first time was hard. The second time, like, okay, yeah, I have that old code. Like I can just bring it in. And like, that's how you do it now. So then you learn more and more. At that time, I was listening to this podcast by Robert Walling. It was called like Startups for the Rest of Us. And I was addicted. It's like when you're addicted to somebody, you're just like, I want to listen to it. He was like very into that, the same like space that I was thinking about. He's like, yes, the first startup you're going to make, the first company you're going to make, you're not going to really learn much, but you're going to learn something. And then the next one's going to be a little bit better and then a little bit better. And he calls it like the stair-step approach. And I've always thought about like that too, where like the first step is good. And next one, and then you're constantly getting a little bit higher and higher. And now, like when I do a company now, like all the stuff of like how to set up a domain name, how to set up a website, all that stuff is kind of like, oh, I've done this like for 5 years. Like this is basic. But then like, you probably know someone asks you, you're like, this is like simple. Like, I don't know. Like how do you, you're like, it's tough for them. Like how to set up a WordPress site, how to set up a Wix site. So that's kind of like what got me into startup. But anyways, going back to like that dream of how to go to California after college, I did go to California and I've never been there, but like, I wanted to go there. And I live in San Francisco because I was like, this is like where everybody else is at, and I have to come go there. And it was fun, and it was everything I imagined and more. And I was just like, I loved it there. I was there for 4 years and working on stuff and still competing on hackathons. So I used to do a lot of like hackathon stuff. Like I'm sure people know, like hackathons is basically you would get together on weekends with like random in cities, like let's say San Francisco or New York, and you basically find a group of people, a designer, developer, coder, someone that's like good with like business, and you just think of an idea, and then in 48 hours you just build it, and you just basically not sleep, just sleep there all and just do it together and then present. And that was fun because you're kind of just like in this motion of like building stuff. And if you win, you win. If not, you sort of have fun, right? So that's the way I thought about it.
You bring up a lot of stuff there. That was really great. I mean, I was taking some notes as you were talking there, like stuff around fascination with making something, really familiar with and not being discouraged by failure. And then this sort of this stair-step approach that you talk about, which kind of reminds me of like things we hear about, project management in terms of waterfall versus whatever, right? So I get all that. So, but you could do that in a company, right? You could be an engineer for a software company, and yet you chose to be on your own. Is there something that is unique about working alone or being the big guy in your own company that is different than working for somebody else? What is it that for you that makes that shift from working for somebody else versus working for yourself?
Really for me, like, so that big shift for me is I always tell people, it's like, I just think that I could do it. And that's just like my belief that I could do something.
You believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really for me, there was like a quote that I heard like over 10 years ago from Steve Jobs. And it's like, I forgot the exact quote, but it goes something like this, where everything in this world was created by somebody no smarter than you. She's like, so why can't you go and do that yourself too? That's and I was like, oh yeah, that's true. Like why? And I've always like thought about that. I was like, yeah, this thing that someone made, like it's made by a person, a human. Why can't that human be me? And I've always thought about that. I was like, for me, it's become even more, it became more cemented in my mindset when I went to Silicon Valley. And then I would like read all this stuff on like TechCrunch, Hacker News, all these like people doing stuff. And I'd be like, wait, like I know that person. And what they're saying is very different than how they are. I was like, it's just like crazy how like the like you're just like so different. But for me, I was like, oh, I know these people. Like that can be me, and that's always how I thought about it. It was like that can be me. Like why is this person doing it and I'm not? Like, but I believe in myself now, and I feel like I could do things too.
That's great. That's great. So can you give me a story, Kevin, when you made a decision for some aspect of your business or one of your businesses that didn't seem to make sense for anybody else? They may have thought, hey, you crazy, man? That makes no sense. Or there's no data to support it, right? No one's ever done it before. But you had this sort of, I'm pulling into my theme here for the podcast, right? Intuition. Yeah. So you had this gut feel that says, no, I need to do this. This feels right. And it turned out to be right. Can you give us a story like when that happened? Because I think that entrepreneurs have a lot of those moments, but we don't always call them out, you know? We might get ridiculed for doing them in the beginning because people don't understand it, but later we cash in and we do very well. And so can you give us a quick little example of when you followed your gut and it proved to be correct?
Yeah. So like one thing basically when I was starting in California, I was working at like a company called Zarly. And then I left that after 4 years to start my own company in New York City. And again, I want to start Maid Sailors, which is a cleaning company. Even that was like, wait, you're Kevin, you're like into tech. Like, why are you studying like a service-based business? So I was like, no, like I can see how like this cleaning industry is so like old school. And by that time I was thinking about companies like Uber and Lyft, which is like, I really wanted to make a cleaning service as in demand. And that's that was the first idea, right? It clearly was like not because like Uber is just like inherently like this thing that people want every single day, where cleaning is like once a week at max. But the idea that I thought was coming from Silicon Valley and for me was that people love when you could see the pricing up front and you could sort of just say, hey, this is going to cost you X amount of dollars. And that's something that software guys always really showed, like, hey, we hate this like sales cycle where like contact us for pricing, right? And like you're kind of like in this like sales cycle, right? And cleaning companies was kind of like that too at that time, where you would go to a cleaning service and then you say, hey, we'll come to your apartment and then we'll measure it and then we'll give you a price, right? And for me, I was just like, no, I want to make it so that we can just like, someone could just book the cleaning, like say you have a studio, one bedroom or three bedroom home on the website with a fixed like price. And so for our studio in New York City, we said, hey, this is gonna be like $100. And yes, we're gonna honor, like basically, of course, that's like $100. And people are just like, well, what if like, it's not a studio? I'm like, well, if they lie to us, which like not that many people lie. Yes. Like there's going to be these edge cases, right? So, but when you're building a company, you don't want to build your company for edge cases. Like say, hey, from 99% of the people are going to be truthful. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's also going to speed up the experience. Now we, as a service-based company, we can save money because now we don't need to go to someone's home, measure it. And then if they don't like it, we just wasted someone's time and they wasted our time, right? Where this way they can really self-select. And now they're also not shocked when they're seeing the price because they say, okay, I know I'm going to pay X amount of dollars versus like, whoa, it's too much. And they're trying to haggle you. And like for now with the online pricing, there's no haggling. They say, no, that's our pricing. If there's a coupon, you can use it, but we're not going to like do this thing because just like the pricing over the phone or pricing in person, there's this thing of like, that means now I can negotiate. And we're just like, no, I don't want to do that stuff anymore. So it's funny because you see that now and like, now every cleaning company is almost like you see the pricing now. And it's just like at that time people were like, sure. Well, like what if your studio is like bigger? I'm like, yes, I get that's going to happen. But like I said, that's maybe 1% of the time. And cleaners, at least for us, cleaners are also sometimes like, hey, like that studio wasn't a studio. And then I tell them like, well, that like 2-bedroom, that was like a studio. Should you give me money back? Because it was less than how paying you more, right?
To simplify, what was the decision that was intuitive that didn't seem to make sense that later became a good idea?
And even I do this now, it's just having the pricing on the website.
That was that your gut feel on that.
Yeah. I was like, hey, if I have the pricing on the website, now the customers that call us or book with us are not surprised. And also they're willing to pay that amount versus like someone that wants like a $20 cleaning, which is was very popular back then.
Would you say that you've had to buck the system, if you will, or you had to kind of go against the trend or the common thought on pricing, that you had to go against that and try something new and it ended up turning out to be pretty good?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like, I just hated like not having the pricing up there because I was so used to in software, like the price being always there.
I want to ask something else here before I get to some other questions here about your work, but I'm going to make a blanket statement and I'm going to see how you respond to it. Entrepreneurs are inherently intuitive.
Yeah.
True or false?
I think they are. I think they're intuitive in their own like sense and the way they want to do things. Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm sort of like leading the witness on that question, but I'm fascinated by the topic. You know, we do a lot of work with a lot of different companies, have for about 25 years. Yeah. And I'm kind of curious about bringing intuition out of the closet and into the boardroom, because I think where there's so much more information that people could be making, so much more engagement we can have with our employees, so many better ideas if we sort of go beyond this fact-based database mindset, which is fine, but I think it's limited, and there's more to human beings. Yeah. Intelligence than what we are consciously aware of. So that's my curiosity. Yeah, so when you said that, I have never made up this correlation that maybe entrepreneurs, by virtue of being entrepreneur, are somehow more practiced at trusting and having confidence in that little voice that says, hey, you should try this. Whereas somebody else would say, that's not possible. Let's don't do it.
I think it's both ways, because for me, it's like, okay, this is like my intuition. And then now I'm going to try to do everything I can to like make it come true. So it's like,
you go.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, okay, this is what I think. And it's like, okay, I'm going to fight everything I have to make this reality that I have. And then that's like kind of another topic itself. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. One of your businesses is all about online advertising for Instagram and specifically for Facebook, correct?
Yep. And even for that company, like same thing with the Mate company, I was like, I'm going to have my pricing online. So all my pricing for that, most obviously you probably know agencies, most of them are like, contact us. Yeah. I'm like, no, like, I'm just like, let me put my pricing online. And then the people that we get, let's, at least for me, I'm thinking about like sales size. I'm like, I don't want to have this crazy sales cycle. I'm like, hey, if you're going to contact us, you know how much we're going to charge. Right. It's no surprising, right? There's no surprise.
That goes against what the common thought is, that you don't talk about pricing until you've got them hooked, and then you have to deal with objections then. But that's a really interesting point of view.
Yeah. But the thing is, I also get the other side too, because I remember when we didn't have pricing, you can like, you literally have like a 100-point PowerPoint deck that you're just like compelling them. Like, this is the case study. Yeah. So it's like, okay, now. But like for me, I'm just like, I still like having the price up front, and I think it's helpful for people to know. And then I tell people, like, we have great case studies and works that show our work. And if you want to contact them, I tell people, like, I'm not here to convince you to work with us. If you want to work with me the way I think, the way our company thinks, then let's work together. Because if I have to convince you, then that's just another battle itself.
Got it. That's really interesting. So, all right. So this marketing company that you do your work around Facebook ads and Instagram. So I want to ask you about that for a second. Right now, of course, we've got an interesting world that's going on. A lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of chaos, a lot of VUCA, if you want to call it, you know, volatility out there. And then, of course, you know, as you mentioned, as we were talking prior to hitting the record button, that everyone's gone online, right?
Yeah.
Netflix is going crazy. Everybody wants to get podcasts. You know, your business is probably doing really well because we don't have anything else to do. So let's play with our phones, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in this world of so much activity and so much request for our attention, how do you cut through all the noise with your ads so that your clients will get noticed? What is your secret sauce to stand out?
Yeah. So this is a good one, because so what we've seen here at Voy, that stuff is working really well. And even for other companies that we don't work with that I get attracted to their ads too. What I'm seeing right now is adding some sort of like humor or like funniness in ads to be working really, really well. Mm. Having a great hook, I think, works really well. So I think funny ads are doing great. And there's a company out there called Harman Brothers. Those guys they make super funny ads. And not my company, but like those guys make super funny ads. And at least for us, that's something that we're seeing be more popular nowadays and something we're trying to incorporate here at Voy too. Okay. But the key for them is, from what I've seen in other companies' campaigns that we've seen too, is that the first 3 seconds, it's really like the main hook of what your ad is and some sort of call out that's going to attract the prospect's attention. So let's say like a common one is like, let's say you have like dry skin. It's really saying like, hey, tired of having dry skin. So you can do that. But other ways people have done it is like show dry skin and like, you know, like a bar of soap, like peeling. It's like you make it sort of like this kind of like weird thing that shows up and that gets attention. So that's the way we've done it now. It's like the first 3 seconds, it's play around with this like messaging that's going to really attract the prospect versus like kind of like a commercial ad. The way really we think about it, it's like start at the high point of the campaign and then you sort of like peel back the layers into like what is the thing that you're showing? Kind of like Star Wars essentially, which is like, whoa, what's going on? And then you're like, okay, like now you know the whole story, right? So, yeah. So because that's exciting. It's like, oh, you're writing the action. So it's like, start with the action, and the action could be many things. And I've seen a lot of funny ads work really well. And I think people like, oh my God, like people probably ask questions like, oh, I'm not funny. I'm like, but there's so many comedians out there that are out of a job. Go hire somebody. Like they can write all these scripts and all this stuff. And
yeah.
So at least for me, the way I'm thinking about Voi, it's like all these writers now have great opportunity for jobs at these agencies because we just want, at least for us, we want people to write us like essentially mini movies, mini scripts, mini trailers. So writers, we're looking for writers. We're looking for comedians that just can like bring something different and say like, hey, this is the format that we like. Now inject your humor in here in these certain pieces.
So I'm thinking about, I love the idea of humor. You know, I really think that's fantastic. It's like, so you caught my attention on that one, right? Yeah. And I started thinking about like, let's take our own company. You know, we deal with a lot of Fortune 5 companies. You know, we've had some international groups. We work with the CEO suite. We work with the board, you know, doctors, physicians, people with a lot of names and stuff behind their name, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? Stupid, smart people is what I call it, right? Really, really intelligent. You know, how lucky have I been to surround myself with such people, right? So if that's the case though, does humor work for all market segments, or does humor only work for certain sort of products and certain sort of demographics? Can you go after a C-suite type of business and use humor, or does the humor work against you and make you look less credible?
I think you can use humor in like a great credibility, because remember, like even though you're targeting like these sort of C-suite companies, the person you're targeting is still human. And humans love being like, wow, this company is so creative. I would love to work for my company. And that's the way sometimes people forget. It's like when you're advertising, you're not advertising the companies. You're advertising to a person that works there. And that person feels things that you feel. They feel sad, happy, love, you know, hungry. So like, how do you attract to that person? And then, of course, the trick, what you're saying is, how can you use humor to relate to their business, right? So it's like, that's like the tricky part. But like all these sort of core emotions are stuff that like no everybody feels. Like I tell you all the time, even though you're like a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, they probably feel sad too, right? So they probably need products that make them happy, right? So
well, that's a good point. Remember a long time ago, long before COVID, there was an ad. I'm not even sure what it was about, but there was people were sitting in a video conference center, right?
Yeah.
They're all their suits on. And they're obviously communicating with the C-suite somewhere in some other part of the country. It's all, you know, before Zoom, but it was a video conference thing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the set falls down and you can see they're on a golf course.
It was
like, oh, you got caught, you know, and it was really funny. And people talked about it as a great ad back in those days.
Yeah.
But I think you've got a good point that funny can be good for any particular demographic.
Yeah, just like you just need to figure out what is like, what's funny in their mind. And I was watching like Kevin Hart, the comedy, right? I'm not sure if he's a comedian.
Yeah.
And he had a new recent special out. And it was about him being at home and like...
Yeah, in his living room, right? With a few people around. I think I had to see that,
And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And then, but for me, it was so interesting because the humor he was showing was for humor and like people in his space and mindset where he was talking about, oh, my kids were dad, I can't go on a private jet. I'm like, we were like, that's not our human, because we're like, that's not us. But you see, for people in his space and like that demographic, that would be funny for them. So it's like, so that's why I thought his comedy wasn't as good as it was, because before it was very like normal people. Now I'm like, okay, Kevin Hart's like millionaire, right? So like he's experiencing different things. So now you could see his comedy kind of changing towards those type of people that have money. And so it made more sense. Like I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like that, the comedy, his humor is changing.
Yeah. Taking this little vein around humor a little bit further, that you can't continue to tell the same jokes over and over again. It's almost like just because I'm, you know, not being able to sleep sometimes, I'll watch a YouTube video, a comedy thing. And I'm noticing just from humor how it's changing.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly there's sexual humor is becoming much more graphic, right? And there's certain comedians out there who specialize in that. And I realized, like, you know, 20 years ago, that would never fly. You know?
No, never.
And now it's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's way out of my league. You know, that's way too graphic. But even the things that we find humorous, I think, aren't as, you know, funny today as it was back then, you know? And so it seems like the message around humor, tell me if I'm wrong, is that it has to continue to adapt and change and be innovative. Yeah.
Yep. And that's exactly it. It's good. It needs to change, because stuff that was funny 10 years ago, like even when I watch, like my niece will like watch a show and I'm like, this is crazy how this is not good anymore. It's just like, it's like, so because you just change, right? So it's like interesting. But yeah, it definitely has to change as you go on, and just like different stuff becomes funny, right? Obviously, like I think Kevin Hart's pretty funny sometimes, and Dave Chappelle was so funny back then. So like comedians are just really funny because they take like stuff that's happening right now and add humor to it. So that's kind of what you need to do with your ads.
Yeah.
And that's why these comedians sometimes are great to hire, because it's like an advertiser. I would tell people, like, when you're advertising, think about, people always say like, oh, I don't watch TV, I don't want to do this. I'm like, but your prospects do. So you need to think about what they're thinking, and then how do you apply it to your ads? Because you might not be the customer, but they are. So you need to take their world and see like, how does their world affect them? Because that makes them decisions to buy things or not buy things.
So shifting gears a little bit. So Kevin, who is your, what's your client base? So with your online media ad company, who do you target?
Yeah. So for here, so e-commerce is a really big one for us, but another big one for us too is like this digital products and like digital goods. And the reason why we like doing digital products and digital goods, it's because it scales. Obviously, it's not just US, it's every country. But again, we also do a lot of e-commerce. In the e-commerce space, we like, at least we prefer doing more supplements and like vitamins and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I tell people I like doing that is because it's more of a recurring product. So you need to sell them once. And then the AOV, the average lifetime value, really helps you, allows you to spend more. And that's something I've learned through my own, like for example, I have an outdoor gear company I was telling you before, Montum, right? We sell like trekking poles. And trekking poles are great, but it's a one-time buy every like 2-3 years, right? So it's not like, you're not like, whereas like cleaning, for example, my cleaning company, someone, you do a great job the first time, someone probably wants to come back now weekly. And then that means like they come all the time. Yeah. For me, I've done both, and I still prefer that sort of business that's like recurring. And I wanted to translate that to e-commerce, and supplements companies are really the one that I love doing. And
when I think about your work in advertising, that you play a role, you play almost like an external company that they may not have internal. And as you get to know these people, you know these businesses, you get to understand where their stress points are, and you become a piece of a larger solution set. What are you finding as some of the struggles that some of these companies are dealing with that might be kind of unique to our day and time right now?
Yeah, I think since we do a lot of Facebook stuff and a lot of video stuff, I think a lot of the struggle comes with kind of what you said before. It's like having like great content or great ideas to sort of see how to film or shoot their products. I still see that struggle a lot with like other founders we work with. It's like they just don't know. They're really good at business wise because you need that skill. But everything nowadays is becoming very visual or audio. And a lot of these founders, they're like, I don't want to be on camera. I don't want to be like my photo. So I'm telling you, you guys need to hire some sort of like young person that is perfectly fine on camera, right? I know when I was growing up, like being on camera was very weird, but now it's like, you're 14, 15 year olds, like perfectly doing like these crazy dances. Like even for me, like doing this was like weird, but now I'm used to it. But I tell the founder, like, you just need to like go and do it. So I see that to be a struggle where it's more like they're just not used to like the new way of doing things. And it's like, you need to do your products. It's kind of used to be a humor before. It's like 20 years ago, like all these sexual jokes would be very weird. Now it's like, oh yeah, that's normal, right?
Yeah, exactly. We were just having this team meeting in our company today. And one of the members of our team has actually been interviewed for the podcast, right? Yeah. This podcast that we're having right now. Yeah. And she's saying, my gosh, I'm a little nervous. I don't know what I'm going to look like. And I'm going, I know I was there. But to your point, you know, I think that certain generation, our generation, my generation, not your generation, but our generation, you know, we're just not used to seeing ourselves on tape, you know, and I've dealt with CEOs and so forth. And I'm thinking, you are the face of the company, and you need to get on video. You need to get on YouTube. You need to get on these different platforms because your role is now expanding. And if you're going to expand into a role about a community member, you need to have the right medium to be able to support that. Sending off newsletters is not going to cut it.
Yeah, no one to do those.
Enough, right?
That's exactly it. Yeah. Like I tell people, like, you need to like be like, as a CEO, you're not just like the person behind now. Like you want to connect with your audience, your community, you show your face out there. Like I always tell people, like, there's a reason why everybody knows Elon Musk, like, cause he's out there all the time doing crazy stuff. Yeah.
I want to just sort of ask you one last question here. Then I want to turn it back to how people can connect you. But if there is something that just is like burning in your belly that says, I really want to tell people this when it comes to growing their business, what is it, Kevin?
I think for, at least for me, like the way I think about it, yes, I tell people we're an advertising agency, right? We do marketing for people. I tell people, if you want to make a platform such as Facebook, Google, Instagram, YouTube, you're like almost 50 to 60% of like where you're bringing customers from. I think it's so important to as a founder, CEO, to know how it works. That way you can truly understand how you're acquiring customers. And then once you sort of know how it works, maybe go to another agency or hire somebody internally. But I think it's so important as a founder to know, like, how does the thing that you're using to bring most of your customers work, or even keeping up to date with like the changes. Like sometimes they're good business owners. They're like, oh, I don't know about the changes. I'm like, this is your business. Like, you should know how Facebook's like updating stuff, because we can only tell you so much. And like, I'm not in your business 24/7 and I wish I could, but this is like your business, right? And as much as we're partners, yes, I don't know everything you know. And I think you should be, because then you never know if this could be something good or bad. And maybe for your next year, you'd be planning out, like, is this like a risk or not a risk for our company, right? So
a great point. I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but many, many years ago, there was this little thing called Enron that went down pretty quickly. And they ended up creating a new law that was called the Sarbanes-Oxley Law. It basically meant that if you were a CEO of a company, you could not throw your CFO under the bus and say, I don't understand finance. Yeah. That's not my job. That you had to sign off on that. Certainly if you were a publicly traded company. And it sounds like in some ways you're saying the same thing. If you're a CEO, if you're a company owner, you need to understand this stuff.
Yeah.
This is important. This is the language in which so many of us are communicating. So do not say, I don't understand Facebook. I don't understand LinkedIn or YouTube or whatever. It's now incumbent in your role to start to understand this stuff.
Exactly. Yep. And that's so important. And it's just going to make your relationships a lot easier with everybody else you work with.
So. That's a great message. I really think this was very, very important stuff that you mentioned today, Kevin. So how can people connect with you? What's going on in your world that we should be watching? Would love to hear.
Yeah. I mean, people can just connect with me through, I love using Twitter, like twitter.com/Danest, D-A-N-E-S-T. It's my favorite social media platform. Really? I've been on Twitter for over like 10 years. And side note, I used Twitter before as like a group texting app with my friends, because I was like, oh, that's crazy. Yeah. And then before, I was like, oh, I was like, was that back then? We didn't have like group text like you have now. But yeah, I love using Twitter. If you ever email me, just kevin@boymedia.com is the best one. Yep.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. Well, Kevin, it's great to talk to you. Best of luck with you and your business. And thank you so much for being a guest on the Business of Intuition.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. And everybody else, just thank you for listening.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.